I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Goat Glow podcast. Over the last year, through my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next few weeks, I'll be speaking to people who inspire me and people who I believe you, the listener, will benefit greatly by listening to. Three-year-old Jada McCann, a new friend of mine, who was diagnosed with stage 4 sarcoma cancer, and she's come here today to tell her story. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's funny, isn't it? I met you when I was diagnosed with cancer and you were working in TV3 at the time.
Yeah. I was doing guest coordination, guest greeting, and you were in that day to talk about your story. I think you'd done maybe 2 cycles of your chemo. You'd only just started your treatment, I know that much.
And then little did you know that that was waiting for you around the corner.
Well, I actually had the cancer at the time, but I didn't know. I found out about 3 weeks after I met you that I had this. At the time, it wasn't stage 4, it was just in my pelvis. And we thought that radiotherapy would give it a good blast and that I could get surgery. But it developed on from there.
Tell us a little bit about your cancer, because I don't think a lot of people know much about it.
So sarcoma is an extremely rare cancer. It's predominantly found in children and young adults. There's over 58 different types of sarcoma, and it's harder to treat because, unlike other cancers that take the consistency of, say, soft tissue, it takes a consistency much harder, almost like bone. So it doesn't react well to, say, chemotherapy, radiotherapy. Surgery is usually the first line of treatment. And if it's not able to be cut out, it's usually kind of, unfortunately, there's not really much that can be done.
So you originally thought you had a different type of cancer at the start. Is that right?
Yes. So when I first got diagnosed here in Ireland, I was told I had leiomyosarcoma sarcoma. So that's a different branch of sarcoma. And that is predominantly actually found. It's one of the rarer types, again, and it's predominantly found in older women, particularly women that have had children and that are maybe in their 60s. It was obviously a concern for us. We were like, why do I have this cancer that nobody else my age seems to have? So when it developed and it metastasized to my lungs, we went to England, to London, because I have dual citizenship. My mum is English. And we went over to get a second opinion, in which time they decided to retest the tissue. And we discovered then that it wasn't leiomyosarcoma, that it was PCOMA. They're so close, they're almost identical in diagnosis. So it's so hard to tell. But in England, they just have more advanced kind of sarcoma specialists and labs.
And how did you feel then when it changed the type of cancer? You know, did that give you some relief? Was there more treatments for that cancer?
So, yeah, of course we were confused and angry, because I was led to believe up until that point, about 8 months of my life, I thought that I was going to die, like soon. Like, they told me 9 to 12 months life with chemotherapy. And that was when I had turned down chemotherapy, I was like, I'm not spending that time sick. Like, I'd rather have a longevity and then a decrease rather than just be constantly ill. So of course I was a little bit annoyed, because I was like, well, I've been, preparing to die all this time. But of course then we were excited, because in America there's so much more treatment options available. In Ireland there are treatment options available here. So I'm on an oral drug now called sirolimus, which is just, you take a tablet once a day, well, 2 tablets once daily, and very limited side effects. I can keep my hair. It is an immunosuppressant, so I do be ill sometimes. But it's it's much better than what I thought. And we still haven't exceeded all of the options. There's still more options.
And how did you feel? I can't imagine how it feels when you get brought into a room and told news like that.
I think for me, they had chosen a consultant that I was really comfortable with to tell me. So I was comfortable with the person that had told me, and my reaction was quite, I think up until the point that it had metastasized to my lungs, I was so scared that I was going to die. So when I got told that it had metastasized and that, or metastasized or whatever you call it, I can never say it. I think I was like, almost like kind of relieved. I was kind of like, okay, well, you know, I can make plans now. I'm not in limbo. I'm not unsure. So part of me was kind of comforted, but, and I know that sounds strange and a lot of people probably can't relate to that, but, you know, it's just kind of the way it was. And, you know, I realized I'm quite a person. I'm the kind of person that once I know what I'm dealing with, I'm okay. If you tell me what I'm dealing with, I can deal with it. But if I don't know, I don't know. And that upsets me. So when they actually told me this is what's happening, I think I was kind of like, okay, well, I'm going to have to work with that, you know, and that's kind of how it was. Like, obviously, my family were so devastated and it's not an easy thing to have to go around and tell everybody either. But again, I took that upon myself to do and, you know, I do get my moments sometimes where I'm shell-shocked and I get really upset. But at the time, I think it was just, right, okay, it's another thing we've got to deal with now, you know.
I think when you are brought into a room and told news like that, the way I felt when they told me I had cancer is like, there's nothing I can do to change this.
Exactly.
This is just the way it is now.
Exactly. And that's kind of pretty much the way I deal with nearly all the consultancies that I have. Regardless of what they say, you've got to realise that, like, there's still a world outside of that room. You've got to adapt that to your own life. You can't change what's inside your body, what's happening to you, but you can change how you deal with it. So I think, of course, when you get news like that, you've got to take it in, you know, take it on board, listen to what they have to say. But there's always a second opinion. There's always alternative therapies and there's always positivity that can bring you a standard of living that, you know, if you take what they have to say on so seriously, you're never going to find that level of life. So you've just got to learn how to think about it in your own way.
How did you feel in the run up to being diagnosed? Did you feel unwell?
No, I just felt very tired. I was also like doubling on shifts and stuff. I was working like two jobs. So I was just exhausted, but I expected to be because of the life I was living and the diet that I was keeping. I wasn't looking after myself very well. I had a lump in my vulva and I was going back and forth to the maternity hospital. So, you know, I think I just thought it was because I was on so many antibiotics and painkillers. I didn't actually think that something like that was waiting for me. Although my dad did have Hodgkin's lymphoma when he was only a few years older than me. And I did relay that in every appointment that I had. And it didn't seem to make much of a difference. So I think I just thought it was my lifestyle choice that had me that tired.
And how did you get your diagnosis then?
They operated on me. They wanted to remove the cyst. And when they opened me up, it was actually a tumour. They actually proceeded to cut it out. And they sent it off to a lab. And that's how we found out then that it was actually cancer.
Were you shocked?
Yes and no. I think I was expecting something to be wrong anyway, because regardless of what medication or antibiotic they gave me, the lump continued to grow. And it was sore and I was tired and I just knew I wasn't myself. So I kind of had an idea that something would be sinister. Now, not as sinister as it was, but I knew something wasn't right. So when they did come back and tell me like, oh yeah, well, you've actually got cancer, half of me was like, oh, thank God something's actually been, you know, dealt with. Like I can deal with this, like we can work with this. I was annoyed, of course, that it wasn't done sooner, but I was also just a bit relieved because I'd been chasing a diagnosis for so long.
You do get peace in a diagnosis, don't you?
Yes.
Because you're like, finally,
yeah,
I know what I'm working with and I know where I stand.
100%, yeah.
I want to talk about you as a person because not only are you stunningly beautiful, but I followed you on Instagram for a while and I think your positivity shines through every single day. And we all go through things and people could have small problems and other people have bigger problems. Was there a moment where you decided that this is the way I'm going to handle this? Did you just get a strength? Did you get a positivity? Were you like that before you got sick?
I was brought up in a house where, like, you know, we've never really particularly had it easy, but we've always stayed positive. And like, you know, we've always kind of had hardships and stuff, but the two rules that we have is like we stick together for one and we have a laugh while we're at it. Like, you know, and I think I brought that into my illness. I never particularly had a time where I decided that that's the way it would be. I just kind of carried on how I'd always been. I'd always been positive and I've always had really good home support. My dad had only been diagnosed 3 weeks before me and we had made a decision with his diagnosis that we'd be positive. So I think it stood for mine as well. And it's just something that we kind of just already had in us.
Is it easier, like, you, obviously this is going to give you a connection with your dad that you probably don't have with anyone else on this planet. What is it like for you both to be going through something similar?
I think you don't ever want to see another member of your family go through anything like that. But I think if I was to choose somebody to go through it with, it would have been him because he's so like strong and our personalities are so in sync. You know, we just kind of click and we're so good together, even just as friends and as, you know, just we're so close. And I think we understand each other so well. So I'm so glad that like I had him to go through with. Like obviously now he's in remission. He got news about a month ago now that he's cancer free and he was also stage four. So that's really inspiring as well.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And your dad's here today. He's sitting behind you, looking at you adoringly. And you just the bond between you is so strong. Yeah. You can see it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it stands in both ways. Of course, we have our positive strengths, but we also kill each other. It's quite a fire fueled relationship. But again, like, you know, the support that we had for each other going through it, I think one of the good things that just worked out the way it did was he was under chemotherapy and immunosuppressant treatment while I was doing radiotherapy. And then I was on immunotherapy or immunosuppressant treatment while he was doing radiotherapy. So we swapped and we could give each other the counter advice. And, you know, we had, you know, certain things left over that we could share with each other, like just silly things like, rubber gloves and bed pads and just silly things that we were able to help each other with. So it worked out really well for us, I think, at home, and we were able to constantly understand how we felt. A lot of the time we didn't even need to share vocally how we felt. I think we just knew.
What are nights like in your house? Are you, I was at home for a year when I was sick. You spend a lot of time at home, don't you?
Yes, yeah.
What are the nights like? Is there a sense of normality? Do you get on with the kind of day-to-day stuff as best you can?
You have to. I think if you're not willing to do that, well, then you might as well just die now. Like, I know it's a horrible thing to say, but if you're not willing to get up every day and do the little things and put the work in and really put the fight into your day-to-day life, like, make the days count. If you're not willing to do that, there's no point. There's no point in fighting for your life if you can't live now. Like, now is what we have. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all we have. It's all anybody has. So I think I have to. Of course, there's days you're sick and you can't. Like, I take that obviously on as well. And I have days like that too. But I think my evenings and my nights, I've got a really amazing boyfriend and we go for dinner. You know I can't drink, but we go for drinks and I'll have one or two and mocktails or whatever. Like, I try to make my life as normal as I can and make the quality of my life as normal as I can, if not for me, but for my loved ones, like for everybody that's watching me, because I want them to know that I'm doing it for them and that I'm here for them too, you know?
Were you with your boyfriend before you got sick?
I was only dating Brent 3 weeks when I got diagnosed. And he was actually in Australia staying with his mum and I had to ring him and tell him. I didn't tell him that I'd been in and out of the maternity hospital or anything. Ken checked because I was only just dating him. I didn't think he needed to know. So it was a big shock for him, but he decided that he wanted to stick around. I don't know why, but he did. He did.
I can see why. Has he been an amazing support to you?
He's been amazing. Like, he's been absolutely amazing. I can't even describe it. Like, he's just there. He's there constantly for me and he tries to make my life as normal as it can be as well. And he also, like, when I'm an inpatient, he brings me out on dates and, you know, he's just so amazing. I just can't explain it. Like, I can't explain the relationship that we have. I think young people are expected to have, like, a kind of normal relationship. Ours isn't exactly like that, but we do try to keep up with what we can. I mean, we do have to accept defeat some days, but for the most part, we just try and make it work as normally as we can.
How has your life changed in terms of diet, your lifestyle, things like that?
I've had to make some really severe changes. And I think a lot of people that get the shock of cancer in their lives learn a lot about looking after themselves properly, you know. And for me in particular, at first I went completely vegan and I found that just too much pressure and overwhelming. And then I kind of threw it all in the bin. I did what I wanted for a while. I think we all go up and down as well. I don't know whether you've done that. I went.
Absolutely.
I kind of was like, okay, I'm sticking to this. And then I was like, oh no, live your best life. And then I was back to. So at the moment, and I think quite steadily, I'm sticking to it. I'm no dairy, no meat, no refined foods, essentially. Just anything as pure as I can. I have a company called Natural Kitchen that drop my food to me every second day, fresh food, and it's all vegetarian, mostly vegan, actually. And it's like overnight oats, and it's all kind of veggie burgers and stuff like that. And I try and keep up with a diet like that. A lot more water, a lot less caffeine, no alcohol, that kind of stuff.
And have you found a difference in yourself since you started eating like that?
Yeah, 100%. My skin, for one, is so much clearer. I kind of have a lot more energy, which is something for me that was a big deal. Like my levels of fatigue were so high. And that was really upsetting me because I couldn't live. When you're that fatigued, you can't live day to day. Like at the moment, I'm so fatigued. I slept on the dart out here and I'll probably sleep on the dart back. Like it's just, like it's kind of like that. But I have noticed a big kind of increase in my energy levels and stuff. My mood is a lot better, which is one that is a big one. Because when you're going through something like this, you can tend to get snappy and upset and feel down. So I think the fact that my mood has increased is a big one, like my level. I'm much more happy in my personal life. I mean, it's very easy to be happy on Instagram. It's 10 minutes of my daily routine to go on and say something. But I think the proof is in my home life. And definitely there's been a lot of benefits, so many benefits.
It's funny, isn't it? Because when I got sick, I said to my husband, because my baby was 7 months old, and I said to my husband, like, I still feel happiness.
Yeah.
I still feel joy. I still have my sense of humour. I'm still the same person.
Yes.
Do you feel, is it weird to be happy in this time for you?
I feel sometimes I am judged online, maybe for being positive and stuff. Because I don't think people understand that you're still a human and you still have all the dynamics of every other human. And they expect you to maybe be sad and stuff. There's a lot of pressure online, I think, for me. But I find it sometimes hard to be happy and find light in things, especially if I'm having a down day. Like, I get that kind of, what's the point? You know, what's the point? I get like that sometimes. But, like, you know, I have people around me that make me laugh, and I've got two beautiful dogs and two amazing parents and a gorgeous boyfriend and a brother and a nan and cousins and people around me all the time that pick me up, like, and that helps. It really helps. But I do still feel every emotion that I felt before. I still do have all the characteristics of my personality that I had before. I'm still a person.
Talk to me about the fact that you don't look sick, because when I was going through chemo, I lost every hair on my body. I looked like a cancer patient. You're sitting here, you're stunning, glowing, got beautiful hair, eyebrows. Do you find it hard? Because I've spoken to people who've worn the cold cap during chemotherapy and they say it's hard because I don't look like a cancer patient. So it's almost like people don't fully get it.
Yes. I do get a lot of kind of weird looks and stuff. Like if I ever come out with it somewhere, people will be like, you know, kind of almost judging, like, no, you're not. You know, like, I've actually been accused online by, like, trolls and stuff of actually making the whole thing up and fabricating it and stuff. Like,
are you serious?
Yeah, seriously, because I don't look sick. I've been out sometime. I was out one time having a drink and somebody come up to me and were like, you know, you don't look sick. You know, people have actually approached me and said that. And it is difficult. And I actually have, like, what do people expect me to do? I'm fortunate enough that I'm on a molecular drug right now and that my hair isn't going to be lost for the foreseeable future. That doesn't mean down the line that I won't have to go on a chemotherapy that will make me lose my hair. It's just that for the moment I'm not. But yeah, it's difficult, and people do treat you differently and look at you differently. And particularly other cancer patients, I think, sometimes can hold almost like, oh, well, you're not going through what I'm going through kind of thing. But you just have to, I don't know, it's crazy. You just have to kind of, you know, just, I think it's education. And I think that's one thing that I want to share with people is that just because I don't look sick, it doesn't mean that I'm not sick. Mm. I still have them days. you know, that my head's down the toilet or that I'm lying on the sofa with a basin beside me or that I can't move, that I can't get up to get the remote, that I have to get people to do things for me, that I need help in the shower. I still have those days. And just because they're not evident in how I look, it doesn't mean that they don't happen.
Your bad days. What I struggled with was that I never knew when they were going to come. So I'd get up in the morning and I'd be fine for an hour. And then boom, oh my God, I'm having a bad day. You kind of don't know when they're coming.
You never know when they're going to come. That's the hardest part. I remember when I was doing my radiotherapy first and I remember crying to my mum and saying, I hate going to sleep at night because I never know what state I'm going to wake up in the morning. And I used to be so afraid to close my eyes and go to sleep because I just didn't know like whether I'd wake up sick or not sick or happy or sad, and I just wouldn't know. And that still happens. Like, I still get afraid to go to bed because I don't know what the next day is going to bring. Mm. But also, like you said, sometimes you can be in the middle of the day and you can have plans and you can be somewhere. That's the worst, when you're somewhere already mm-hmm. and you have a bad day and you have to say, I'm sorry, I need to go home, and you have to make excuses and leave places. Or if you stick it out, and it's even worse sometimes when you try and do that. But like, I missed my cousin's baby's christening, and my cousin's like a sister to me. Like, I missed a lot of really important stuff just for being sick, and it's not easy. It's like, I hate not knowing. That is the hard part. If you had noticed, you could plan around it. You could, you know, it'd be so much easier, but you just never know. And I think that's one of the things you've got to learn with cancer, is that you just, it happens the same way that it came. You don't know when it's going to come. You don't know how it's going to be. You don't know how you're going to feel. And you just have to constantly be prepared. I have like an emergency bag in my handbag for if anything happens, like when I'm out. You know, I've also got like an emergency medication pack at home. I've also got like things around me constantly. So like, I just have to constantly be prepared for the worst.
Have you found with your cancer that you've become more assertive? So like you said, you're able to go, I need to leave now.
Yeah.
And not feel guilty for that.
That took time. And like, my dad was one of the people that kind of helped me with that, and that I used to be terrified of letting people down and terrified of telling people or using my sickness, because I used to think people are going to think that I'm not actually, you know what I mean? Especially because I don't look sick. But I think Dad really helped me in that. It's like, Jade, you have to put yourself first. Like, at the end of the day, these people don't feel how you feel, and you have to train your mind into putting your body first. And I've had a lot of counselling and stuff around that as well. The oncology counselling that I've been getting has been really helpful, and that I have become so much more assertive, even cancelling big things like interviews or things like that that are huge. Like, I have to just be like, I'm sorry, we have to reschedule, I'm not well today. I think as well, one of the reasons that I've become more assertive is that I realise my quality of time that I'm going to give people, and I'm like, that is going to be so low, and I'm much better off waiting until I can actually offer people a standard of my time where we have a good time together and we spend like good times, like where we're out and I'm able to walk or whatever. I have to just weigh it up and be aware that like it's not fair even on them to show up the way I am, because it's not worth what like they think they're getting. I'm much better rescheduling, going when I'm much better.
Are you different now? Every part of my life is different. And not just the way I think about things at certain times. It's like every second in my head is different to what it used to be. Is that the same for you?
I think so. My whole mind is so much different. Every single thing that I do is so different. I think like before in my life, the way that I was living, I was just about to move to New York. I was working 3 jobs. I was renting a place in Bray. I was living on my own, essentially. I was working in media. I was wearing myself out. I was burning the candles at both ends. I was eating takeaway food all the time. I was eating conveniently and stuff. And I was just this girl on fire, like ready to move to New York. And that's the life that I was living. But I think I needed to be stopped in my tracks to be reminded of what's important, because the things I held in high regard then are not the things that I hold in high regard now. Like, my main concern then was like, I need to get to New York. And if I felt sick, I didn't care. You know, I didn't have much compassion for other people either. I have to admit, I was just so much more worried about my career and myself.
And what was New York? What did you want to do there?
Media. I wanted to go and work in media. there's a high demand over there for young people, young Irish people in particular in media, and I wanted to go and live there. It's my dream. It still is my dream. So that was taken from me too. And I think you have to just go with the punches, and, you know, a lot was taken from me, like my career, my dreams, everything that I wanted to do. But I'm very lucky in that I was still able to incorporate it into what I'm doing now. The Instagram was kept and stuff like that. But everything that I do now is so different. Everything, how I think about things. I have much more compassion. I'm so much more thoughtful, and I try to be so much more kind. I give people more time. I'm more patient. That's a big one. I was never patient in my life. I'm so much more patient. I've slowed things right down. Mm-hmm. Even how I talk, how I eat. I just think about everything so much more. And, you know, even my family, my relationships, everything, everything is so different.
It's an appreciation for moments, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah.
Like when I go to the beach now, I just take a second because I'm like, this is stunning.
Yes.
And I'm not just going to jump out of the car, go down to the beach and not take a second to like take it in and look yeah. around.
I take so much more in, and I take the moments that you're talking about. Like, I have so many of them on a daily basis. You know, like, even just in the city, I love being in a city. Like, walking through Dublin, looking around, taking it in. Like, taking in all the different energies, all the different people, all the different kind of wondering where people are going. Like, looking at the individuality of people and, you know, appreciating, like, every single thing that is given to me on a daily basis. I take it right in, and I'm thankful. I'm so grateful.
Has your circle gotten smaller?
Yes. I think anybody that goes through anything hard in life will agree. It's hurtful, but you've got to just be, I think, I constantly tell myself that who and what is for me will not pass me. And I just have to, you know, appreciate the people that have stepped up. Sometimes they're people that you never, ever think. Like, one person that stepped up for me was somebody that was just in my college course. I wasn't even friends with her. And she just kind of came out of nowhere and was like, I want to help. And I was like, okay. And we're like best friends now, you know. So, yeah, my circle has definitely gotten smaller. I was never one for hanging around in big groups anyway. But a lot of the people that I would have called friends fell off the radar.
That same thing happened to me. Like, not too much, but with a couple of friends it did, that I'm still very upset about to this day.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel angry towards them. I'm like, I'm young. Maybe, you know, they don't know what it's like to have cancer. They've never had a friend that's had cancer before. I try not to judge them for it. I just kind of had to just let them go.
Yeah, I think I had to do that. I think I kind of maybe had to, in my mind, understand a little bit why they done it. And the conclusion that I came to is that emotionally, they couldn't handle it. And in my life, I've had things that I could emotionally not handle. And I had to kind of maybe just relate to that. On the other hand, I had to get a bit annoyed and say, well, emotionally, I can't handle it either, but I can't leave. So, mm-hmm. like, I was annoyed. But also, you've just got to maybe, like, I really had to just have compassion for them and let them go with kindness and just think to myself, if you're not meant to be here for me on this journey, well, then you're not meant to be here. And, you know, I had to just live with that and take that in and let that go and just, you know, and I stopped trying to follow up with them. I stopped calling them. I stopped texting them, trying to include them. I just stopped because it was I'm at a place in my life where, like, I'm ready for a fight. Like, I'm doing my best and I'm staying positive and every day I get up and I try my best. And if you're not willing to either support me or join me, you need to leave. So the fact that they left my life maybe was a blessing because I maybe couldn't be as strong as I am with them here.
How do you manage anxiety?
Differently in different times, I suppose. At the moment, I've recently been put on antidepressants and I don't think there's anything shameful about that. I think that it's pretty normal, actually. I was on them when I was younger. And for people going through any sense of trauma, sometimes they're very helpful. But meditation is a big one, huge one. I meditate every day. I recently got my Reiki master as well. So I went and did all that kind of, I learned more about mindfulness and alternative therapies. essential oils is a big, huge one that I use, aromatherapy. And just like breathing exercises and stuff, I just try to bring it back to the moment. My anxiety tends to come in moments that I actually am completely safe, but where my mind wanders. And then I just get this really overwhelming feeling. I've had to really learn to take it back to where I am and just learn all these different tools and skills that I can bring with me in my mind.
So to try not think about tomorrow.
Yes.
Think about today. In this moment, I am okay.
Yeah.
And I am calm.
100%. And also being honest about it with whoever you're with. That's a big one that I learned. Turning around to my boyfriend and going, you know what, Bren, I'm actually, right now I'm really anxious. I can't really breathe. Is it all right if we don't go to the next shop? Can we just step outside for a second? Like doing things like that, because beforehand I would have just been like and not told anybody and gone along with it and been in a crowd and made myself worse. Do you know what I mean?
My husband Jamie would be sitting on the couch like when I was going through chemo and I'd just start thinking of something and then it's running away with you and he could always tell by my face.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you thinking about? I'm like, Jamie, I just can't breathe. I can't breathe. I'm freaking out. Oh my God. And I'd feel so guilty because we'd have just put on a movie or it's a Saturday night and we've been talking about cancer all week and he just wants to watch the bloody film with a glass of wine and have a bit of peace. But he always press pause and we could be sitting there with that bloody thing on pause for 10 minutes or 2 hours because it's just so important to have people around you that just totally get it and who aren't gonna, I suppose, be annoyed that they have to drop whatever they're doing to help you.
You're always gonna meet people that are gonna sometimes be a little bit selfish and that they won't understand. And that's okay too, because you've got to learn to stay away from those people, I think, when you're going through something like that. But yeah, it's so important to surround yourself with people that can jump on board. So one person for me would be my mum. So my mum is very kind of with it when it comes to mental health awareness and different tools and stuff. You know, she's been through a lot in her life and she's come so far. So my mum is somebody that I can always call or always tell or always rely on. She's also somebody that always knows when there's something wrong with me. It's like she just knows. She calls me and she's like, I just had this feeling that like maybe you're having a bad day. I'm like, funnily enough, mum, I am. Like
that is so weird. My mum did the same thing. Like she just arrived at my house. I'm like, how does she know that?
I know. I think, yeah, it is. And like my dad as well also, because he understands the certain anxieties that I am going through. So he can always kind of relate and he can tell me how maybe he deals with it. And Buddhism is a huge thing in my house as well. So we practice Buddhism at home and we'd do a lot of that kind of stuff, a lot of kind of reading and chanting and stuff like that. So like it's important as well for us to bring that into nearly everything and we'll kind of recommend different exercises if we're talking to each other. But it's so, like you really need to have people around you that understand.
What does your Reiki master do? Like obviously Reiki, but
yeah, okay.
What's involved in that?
So Reiki is energy healing. And it's the belief that, you know, you've got 7 chakras and that, you know, if you can cleanse your body and cleanse your energies. And it's the belief that every single thing in this room has energy. So the table, the floor, everything. And basically my Reiki master, she was amazing. Her name's Jen. She's still to this day somebody who's so good for me. But she cleanses my energies and she teaches me. She can cleanse my energies because she is attuned to a higher level of energies. She was attuned by her Reiki master. So you can pass energies on and like strengthen your energies by passing them on and sharing them. So Jen attuned me to Reiki Master, which means that she has attuned me to a higher level of energy so that I can heal myself.
And do you feel like that you do that?
I definitely feel more in tune with my body and I definitely feel that my energies are more sensitive so I can pick up on people easier if I'm in crowds. I tend to pick up on other people's energies, different things like that, that my body definitely does feel the difference. But practicing Reiki at home has definitely given me, you know, just like something to do even where I don't feel so powerless. But yeah, I do feel that sometimes it can really, really help, especially with aromatherapy involved.
And what are the oils about then?
So aromatherapy is different oils can help with different things.
Okay.
And that goes back to like way ancient beliefs, like I don't even know when it goes back to, but it's really old kind of medicine. Like, it's Eastern medicine, so it's not Western medicine. And it's the belief that that you can help your ailments, or even just you can heal them in some ways, but like probably not cancer, just more kind of subtle ones. But you can help yourself with aromatherapy. So, for example, frankincense and geranium would be cancer fighting aromatherapies. And, you know, lavender is a really good one for female and feminine problems. So it's just about doing your research and applying them then to whatever's bothering you at that time.
And do you burn them or rub them in?
I have a diffuser and I do rub them on myself. You can also put them into neutral shower gels. You can make candles with them. There's loads of things that you can do with them.
Wow, that's so fascinating. What are your hospital stays like? Do you hate going in there or do you rest in there?
I don't hate going into hospital. I think if you connotate a negative thing to it, it's never going to be a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
So why never think about it? Like, it's fine. I make the surroundings my own. I bring things that make me comfortable, photos, teddies, blankets, and I just settle in. But I tend to not stay in the room. So there's a chapel there. I go there to meditate. There's gardens around. Like, just make it your own and do what you would normally do.
Jada, I'm so blown away by our conversation today. Like, I didn't really know what to expect coming in here. And you are so positive and the way you speak is so powerful. And I can't help but feel positive after speaking to you and happy. And thank you so much for being so honest and spreading your message. And I can see why so many people follow you, because you really are a powerful influence. So thank you so much for taking the time to come in today. But I want to leave the last words with you. I want to know what you want people to know.
I think you can have cancer or cancer can have you. And I think you have to look at it both ways. What way do you want to live today? Do you want to let this disease take over everything that you have? Or do you want to take back some power and at least keep your dignity and who you are? And I think that's kind of the decision that I make daily, is that I know I'm going to be who I am. I'm going to share who I am. And I'm going to, you know, I'm just going to keep doing what I did before, but with this extra load.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new episodes. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. You can check out thegoodglow.ie for more on my story and follow me on Instagram @GeorgieJCrawford.